Good morning and welcome to How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
Our question from yesterday, the most important thing my mother ever told me was, dot, 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 record and listen. And here's our first caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Good morning, everybody. This is Goli.
Hey, Goli.
How are you?
Excellent, thank you. And yourself?
Happy to hear your voice.
Happy to be here, huh?
Yes, happy to be here.
All right. What are you seeing?
So what was really interesting to me is that even though I didn't really grow up with my parents, and especially I wasn't with my mother very much at all, I still got certain messages. And even going back to the projections, which I would love to hear you say more about. And so I definitely, conditioning was immediately able to draw in a message from my father and a message from my mother. And I noticed that I have lived my whole life listening to the message from my father and discounting the message from my mother. And it's interesting that I still have all those messages operating all these decades later.
Isn't that sobering?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, because what we get to see in that is, and you, of course you're not alone in this, right? We get to see that we are living our lives from the perspective of a very small child.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, do you want to say what those were, or?
Sure. The most important thing my father ever told me, the way it came, you know, through the exercise, was that I should study and do well in school. And, you know, I took that to mean study.
And you have.
I have, yes.
You are still doing well in school.
I am. I'm still doing well in school and working really hard and really dedicate my whole life to work. And then my mother, again, what came across, and I don't know how this came out, was that I should understand men and get married. And I realized that I still don't understand men, and I've never been married.
Uh-huh.
But I still have that. It still plays in my mind that I should, you know, understand men, and I should be married, and you know, and so it's always a sense of failure for me in my mind.
Let me ask you this, Goli. Did you admire your parents' relationship? Did you see your mother's life as something you would like to emulate?
Not at all. Just for a little bit of content, my parents got divorced when I was around 5 years old, and my mother's passed away now, but whenever I think of her, I have such a lot of sorrow for her because I think she had such an unhappy life.
Yeah. Well, that could explain a lot about not following her advice.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
As I'm speaking to you, I noticed that her advice was because she didn't understand men and she didn't have a happy marriage. And, you know, that was the road in her generation to having a happy life.
Yes.
So,
and it didn't work out. So she's trying to impart to you the advice that will get you the life that she didn't have. So in that classic... there's something wrong with me. There's, we know how hard it is to look at
well, maybe the information is incorrect. Maybe there isn't anything wrong with me. Maybe the information is not valid. But for mm-hmm. her, that's what we want to do with our children is tell them what we've been told in the hopes that even if we weren't successful at it, they will be.
Mm.
You see what I mean?
Right. Yes.
And was your father, would you say your father was successful in his approach to life?
Yes, in terms of the messages he gave me, because he was the youngest of seven children, and they were not very wealthy, but he managed to get himself through school, and he became a medical doctor. And even after the revolution, when he left Iran and he came to America, he did his proficiency exams, which were extremely difficult, and was able to have a practice here. So professionally, yes, he was.
That's right. So you could look at Dad, and I'm sure even at that tender age, mm-hmm. and realize who is the power figure here? Who do you want to emulate?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be Mom, because Mom was not a powerful person, and Mom did not have a life that you wanted. But being more mm-hmm. like your father was going to give you a much better chance in life. And you know what? It has.
It has. Yes. Uh-huh. So I have to say, I'm very grateful to the little kid who, with the few resources she had, made the best decisions that she could. And
that's right.
Did pretty well, considering.
Very well, considering. Yeah, she did very well. And here you are. And again, it's just so fascinating to be able to look back and see some of the beliefs and assumptions and the projections, and then see all of that from a larger perspective. Mm-hmm. And to realize, as you say, that we can sympathize with Mom and what she was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we can sympathize with Dad and mm-hmm. what he was doing, and them both doing the best they could for you under the circumstances.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So, well, thank you. Lots to see.
Yes.
Say it again, Dolly.
I said I love these exercises. Thank you for these.
Oh, yeah. They are. How could something so simple be so powerful, right? But
absolutely.
They are. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Go happy.
Thank you. You too. Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Dolly. The thing that struck me most about that conversation, Sherry, is our conditioning to believe there's something wrong with me rather than question the information that we're being given.
Yeah.
And therefore to be trapped in that orientation.
Yes, for decades. For most people, all of their lives. Because it's a brainwashing system. Right? Not that there's volition behind it, but that's what it is. We are conditioned. We are trained. We are programmed to see life in a certain way. And to get to the point of questioning that takes a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yes, especially because the information we've received is from authority, right? The authority in our lives. And we never get to that place of it can't be true, that it may actually be different. And then it takes something like doing an awareness practice and questions like these to really understand the foundations of our assumptions of our reality, you know?
Yes. And for most folks, it takes a lot of suffering.
Yes, actually, yes.
We suffer so much with the information that we've been given, the orientation that we have, that we become open to another possibility.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The wearing away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, here's our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Ashwini. Renee in Oregon.
Hello, Renee.
Hey, Renee.
What are you seeing?
Well, I haven't been able to call in except for today, but I've been listening to all the calls this week and last week about the family, and it's just been so interesting and fun. So I just want to say that first. So the thing that my mother taught me or told me was that I could do anything that I wanted to do. And she modeled it because she worked and she pretty much did what she wanted to do. And
and so there was no lack of resonance there.
No, not at all. And I think that it also was in that message. Of course, a lot of that's good in terms of that attitude that I have in my life. However, it turns into you have to take care of everything. You know, you have to be the one who does do everything. You know, so
that was also the message. You can do whatever you want to, and what you want to do needs to be this.
Yeah. Yeah, or just carry the burden, like you are so capable that you can take care of everything, you know, so, So, it's good.
And was that, did she model that? Did she take care of everything? Was that part of it, or was it more a you can do whatever you want to do, and somebody else will pick up the parts you don't want to do?
Well, are you asking if she did that?
Yeah, I'm asking how you saw her living her life. Did she pick up all of the pieces? Did she carry the burden? Or was her message more that you can do whatever you want to do part of it?
Well, it was like you can be whatever you want to be. Like, there are no boundaries or limitations, like, in terms of, if you want to be a doctor, if you want to be this, if you want to be that, whatever, you could do it. Kind of that was the message. Mm-hmm. I didn't really grow up in a patriarchal family. I grew up in a matriarchal family, so I didn't really get that until I got older. Like, it was mostly women can do anything they want. And then, but then there was also this piece of she didn't always take care of everything, so then it fell onto me.
Yes.
Even as a child.
That's the piece I was curious about. So your capableness meant you could do all of these things that needed to be done. So it wasn't just a go out there, girl, and be whatever you want to be. It was here's the practical application for all of that ability.
Yes. Right. And and so I could still see that in my life, throughout my life, that I, you know, carried that responsibility and that burden and still do today, you know, and so it's the karmic tendency. I don't really have this fear of doing something like a lot of people have. It's more of, I want to do everything. I'm going to jump in and then I can't.
You can't because you have to carry the whole burden for everybody.
Carry the whole burden and it's just impossible, first of all, to do everything. and then it turns into suffering instead of,
the place that I thought you were going to go there is that you can't do all of the things that you would like to do because you have do all of these things. So if you didn't have more to model your life after your mother, if you didn't have to take care of all of the burdens of life for you and everybody else, might you have a lot more time to do the things that you would like to do?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So those work together in an interesting way.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes.
Exactly. And in the way that ego likes to set up. So something that is a positive can be turned into a negative. So you can do anything you want to do, and you should.
Right. Exactly. Turns into a should. Yes.
Yeah. And then the other piece of it, which is, and a huge part of that should, is taking responsibility for everybody else.
Yes. And it's really confusing. Starting with mom, definitely. And then after she passed away, it was, you know, but before she passed away and after, it's other people. But the thing that's confusing about it is it feels like there's, it's the typical conditioning allure, I guess you would call it, or the feeling you get when you get that rush of doing something, you know, and then yet it's not really what I want to do, but it's what conditioning wants me to do.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yes.
And it feels, there. You have articulated perfectly the trap, right?
Right.
So it feels right. So good to do what conditioning says you need to do to be a good person. That feels
right.
So good that letting go of that feels awful.
It feels awful and it feels wrong, and it, because mm-hmm. a lot of times what conditioning wants me to do feels like the right thing to do.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And
like
once
a good
that
person
system,
thing to do.
A good person thing to do. And once that gets
yeah.
set up, there's the trap. Because
yeah.
you have to face, if you're going to go up against that karma, you're going to have to face feeling like a bad, wrong person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ooh. Right. Right. Yeah. It's a lot. And I see it going on, especially with politics and everything going on, just so much, you know, it's up to me, you know, it's such
yes.
a trap.
And to go
such
against
lie.
That, yeah, to go against that karma, you have to be all right having conditioning tell you that you're the wrong, bad person. Freedom
yeah.
lies on the other side of learning to say,
yeah.
to recognize conditioning for what it is and to say, no, thank you. I don't want your definition of the good, right person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I
wow.
like that, what you said.
Yeah.
You have to be willing
okay.
to be the wrong person. Yeah.
Yes. By condition standards. Conditioning is going to tell you that you're the bad,
yeah.
wrong person if you don't choose it.
Whew. Yeah.
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 Thank you for that,
thank
Renee.
You.
That, yeah, that's huge.
It is.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Renee. It's such a powerful insight, right, Sherry, that when we recognize the process of how we've been conditioned to experience ourselves as good according to a conditioned standard of good, and then that prevents us from being present to being appropriate in the moment, that is not being controlled by the conditioned system. And then that takes us getting used to a different set of sensations in the body, because the sensations are signaling to us that we're going in a direction that's incorrect, but it's a direction away from conditioning. And so it requires a kind of reprogramming almost.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And the first piece of that is seeing it, right? Recognizing, kind of diagramming it out. And the place that I like to compare it is quitting something, quitting a habit that is, I'll go for mine, smoking cigarettes. That to quit felt so awful. It was really hard to imagine that it could be a good thing to be doing. So
exactly.
If we then take it to something like being a workaholic, I'm getting all this good information from while I'm killing myself, I'm getting all this information from conditioning that I am the good, right person for doing this. And so to realize that I've fallen into this trap where what's telling me that I'm the good, right person is the very system that is sucking the life out of me. So I have to recognize that process and then start turning away from that and choosing life, we could say, choosing a different source of information.
Yes, it's very tricky. It's really tricky. And
yeah.
So seeing the trick, seeing that the non-intuitive, because the way the mind is programmed is to see it a particular way. In order to see it differently, there's a reorientation. And what you're talking about is we have to be able to see how it works in order to be free of it, to know that we're not freeing ourselves out of being a good person. We're freeing ourselves from a conditioned standard that has controlled us.
Right. Beautifully stated. Yes. In fact, what we get on the other side of that is to realize, as we're fond of saying, that our goodness was already established. We don't have to earn it.
Yes.
And that we are a good person, present and enjoying life, rather
mm-hmm.
than
yes.
A sacrifice to ego.
Yes. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
Big time.
All right. Yes,
thank
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Tom in Texas.
Hello, Tom.
Hello. It's good to hear your voice and Ashwini's voice, and so
and
thankful
yours.
To be on. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I often rephrase the name of this class is how ego does anything. Is how ego does everything, because it's
mm-hmm.
been so awakening to, I mean, I am fully participating in this class, recording and listening, sitting, fully participating, not a radio show unlistened, not a page left unmarked, and yet ego pops in and will come up with a voice that says, but it's going to be over in December. You know, it comes in and takes the perfect
yeah.
practice opportunity and immediately, like in a nanosecond, says, yeah, but it's almost over. So I find that so intriguing, and as everything
yes.
I've noticed. And sort of
yeah,
gets
so,
to...
So, Tom, so you the requirement there, or the expectation on ego's part is, okay, so let's get out of this moment where you're enjoying yourself and feeling really good. Let's focus on a negative in the future so that you'll feel bad about that.
Immediately.
Yeah.
And now, and being awake, I can see it everywhere. You know, oh gosh, I love my dog, but the dog's going to die. You know what I mean? It happens
mm-hmm.
so rapidly. But
yeah.
seeing it is all it takes, and then dropping. And so it's been, I'm so thankful for all of that. But it brings me to this exercise. So in There Is Nothing Wrong With You, you say it doesn't matter if you've grown up in a perfect childhood or not, the process is the same. And so I've noticed, and another caller brought this up, but I was brought up in a, quote, perfect childhood. My mother, every day of our lives, sent us out and said, I love you like Jesus loves us. And so I've had a base of unconditional, and so that's how the first part of my life, I lived the first part of my life. And then all of a sudden, as if ego wanted to have a problem, wanted to create a bad childhood, ego started coming up with ways that my father was unkind to my mother. Or it's seeing it now for the first time clearly, all of a sudden ego came in and made it a non-perfect childhood. And so it's been... This is so, it's just incredible to see now, to see my parents perfectly clearly, to see anything that ego called wrong with my dad, parents arguing, or just human behaviors or behaviors in relationships that are not bad. So it's given me sort of a whole new appreciation of both parents and gratitude. So thank you. So the process has been
ahead.
Incredible. Watch. No, please.
Yeah, and thank you for that piece of it, because that is exactly what's happening, not only with our childhood, but all the time, right? So I don't know what your life circumstances are, but say you're in a situation, in a meeting, in an exchange, and it goes really well, and you feel good about it. And then you walk away, and conditioning starts in. Well, it's often, well, Yeah, well, uh-huh, but, right, and it's just this, there's kind of a drip of information designed to alter your experience of what just happened to you. And until it, and depending on the circumstances, of course, it begins to create doubt. Well, maybe. And by the time it finishes with that, whatever that was, by the time it gets stored away, filed away, it will have at least tarnished it. If it doesn't turn it completely into a negative, into a failure, then it's at least tarnished. There's enough doubt about how they really felt about you, or what they were really thinking, or what that actually means, that it's, yeah. And
yes,
it's doing that all the time.
Yes. So great to see. Thank you for providing the opportunity for this waking up. It's incredible. Thank you so much.
Isn't it? What a miracle we've got going here.
I am so fortunate and grateful. So thank you to everyone.
Me too.
Okay.
Thank you, Tom.
Gotcha.
Thanks, Tom. Sure, we have time for one more caller. So let me bring that caller in.
All right.
Yes. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, this is Dan in Los Angeles. Hi, Sherry. Hi, Ashwini.
Hey, Dan. You sound like you're in a bit of an echo chamber.
Okay, let me... I'm trying to fix it.
Oh, well, way better.
Okay. Good.
Much better.
Okay.
Yeah. What are you seeing?
So in process land, what's the most important thing my mother's told me? And looking for the thing that's helped me most, and a few of those dropped in intellectually. And then it occurred, what's the most important, and I guess is the thing that I'm living the most. And so I was looking to see how I behaved in a similar way to my mother. What of her way of being I emulated the most, and I figure that maybe is what the kid considered the most important. And so on the one hand, this comes with compassion and a little bit of sadness, that the thing you picked up was you have to be anxious all the time and scan the environment and figure out what you haven't done and go do that. And I really liked what I heard earlier about this was all done without volition, and that seemed to bring some healing to it. And just realizing it's a message from my mom. Are you still there?
Yes, I was waiting to ask you. Are you saying that your mom had this? Well, the word that came for me was slightly paranoid orientation to life, where she's constantly scanning for what's wrong or didn't happen or needs to be done or whatever that is, and then scurrying off to do it. Is that?
Yes, yeah, and I picked that up very well.
Uh-huh. And Dan, do you have a projection about what was going on in her life that caused her to be that way?
She was the eldest daughter, and there were 7 kids total, so she kind of became their mom. And from what my parents said about her parents, her mom was also very, nagging was the word they used, but there was always something wrong. And I can see where she was, might have been projection, might have been getting judged all the time and having to fix everything for her and her siblings, keep
uh-huh.
her mom happy.
Mm-hmm. And any sense of your dad's role in that?
Um, he was the one who got to be wrong before the kids came along. In the sense that someone is the judger, in this case my mom finding the things that are wrong, and my dad being, quote-unquote, the victim, although the judge is a victim too, I guess, being the victim and the one who's doing things wrong and needs to be fixed and told how to do it right.
Well, I'm going to hope that you continue to look at that, because, yes, of course, your mother's conditioning and your conditioning via your mother, to look at that, and but to look a little behind that, because generally speaking, people who are secure and happy and relaxed don't tend to have those kinds of behaviors, and so there's a lot of distortion in the call here.
Oh. Okay.
Kind of painful.
Maybe Dan, you can put yourself in on mute, Dan, while Sherry's talking.
Trying.
Okay. Well, I can make it very quick. This is just something to consider. Okay. In many, 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 many families, mom is a nag and dad is the fun person. And so mom is there making sure people brush their teeth and bathe and eat and do their homework and get to school on time. And dad, who's not there for a lot of it, comes in and is just fun. And by the end of the day, mom is really, really tired of having to fight with people to get them to do what needs to be done. You know, you're a kid. You don't care. I don't care. My teeth are fine. I don't need to brush them. And there's somebody in a position of being part police officer and part whatever else it is, maid and head nag. And so just to have a little bit maybe a more grown-up point of view when we look at these people, as to what else might have been going on with them. So I just offer that. So, Ashwini, do we have another minute?
Yeah, we do. And as far as I can tell, Dan's not unmuted. He should be live on the air.
Okay. Hopefully that's better. Thank you.
Oh, there he is.
I missed a bit of it, but I will listen to the recording.
Okay, all right.
Sorry to everyone.
No, that's fine. It was just it got very technologically challenging. So
yeah.
All right. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye bye. Go happy.
Bye bye. Okay. Are you there, Ashwini?
Yes, I am.
Well, I was going to get a little bit political this morning. If we have a couple of minutes, because I just read this amazing article yesterday by a man who I think he's a psychotherapist, but I'm not sure who he is. But he was doing a thing on sexual assault, and he was doing it with this large group of men and women. And so he said to the men, "So how much time every day do you worry about sexual assault?" And after some laughing and joking and that sort of thing, the guys got to none. And then he asked the women, "How much of your life is devoted to avoiding sexual assault?" And the list of things that the women had to worry about, needed to pay attention to all the time was, I think there were like 50 items that he listed in this article. And so it was sobering to me and riveting to consider, because I could see for myself how many of those are just a natural part of my life and a natural part of every woman's life. And so I offer that only because from a child's perspective, what people are doing, what adults are doing, will look one way. And when we grow up and we start opening ourselves to other people's perspectives, we can often find that there is much going on in life that we are completely unaware of simply because our conditioning doesn't contain that orientation. So maybe anybody who wants to tune in on for open air on Tuesday night, we can continue that discussion because it covers so many aspects of life, what it's like to be of a different race, of a different color, of a different ethnicity, and what it's like to be poor, to be uneducated, to be, when we look through our own eyes, it's very easy to fail to see everything else that is going on. And I'm definitely not directing this at Dan. I'm grateful to Dan for bringing this up because to me it fits very well with the questions that we've been looking at. We're looking at our parents and we're seeing them through very conditioned eyes. And he did mention generation, or I guess Goldie mentioned generations. My generation is very different, say, Ashwini, that's from the generation of your parents, and my parents were a generation before that and back, and how things have changed. So anyway, enough. I know we're past time. What's our question?
Well, thanks for the invitation, Sherry, because I think the bottom line is that is always what we look at, which is when we're looking through conditioning, we're not here. It's a biased orientation, and it's not anyone's fault. It's just a biased orientation.
Right.
And all we're doing is recognizing the bias so that we have a choice to see differently.
Yes. Yeah. Well stated. That's it. Mm-hmm.
So our question for today is really interesting. How did your mother maintain distance between herself and you?
Aha. Uh-huh. Oh, another great opportunity for looking. All right. Thank you, Ashwini. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.